Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, December 6th. I'm Ray Graff. Dr. Ron Scharf of the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York, is in the studio this afternoon to take your questions about all your feline and canine companions. Our Pets and Vets program is always a popular one. The line is long, so best to get in now when all 10 lines are open. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. If you have a question about your kitty or your doggy for Dr. Ron Scharf, you can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number on this program, this call-in program, is 800-348-2551. Pets und Vets coming up. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program. And here to take your calls today is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, New York. Dr. Scharf, a 1985 grad of the Veterinary College at Cornell, extensive background in conventional veterinary medicine. Always great to have Dr. Scharf on the show. It's been a while, Ron. Welcome back.
So glad to be here, Ray. It's always a pleasure to be here with you doing the show. And it's good to be back.
Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. As I mentioned at the top, always good to get in early. A few open lines now. There may not be in a few moments. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. And we do try to get to a few emails if we can. But again, it's a call-in show, so best to call. 800-348-2551. In low these 6 or 7 months since you've been on, what's new?
There's a lot of stuff that's new, Ray. There's always things going on. There's always similar stuff every year. You know, the holidays coming up, the risks to animals. We always send out emails and blogs and Facebook about what to watch out for.
What are you watching out for?
Well, you're watching out for your animals getting into things that could be harmful for them, chocolate and you know, certain plants, the holiday plants, a lot of them can be toxic. The mistletoe,
really?
Holly. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're kidding me.
And a few other ones. What you want to do is just be careful. You got an animal, you got a tree, a Christmas tree. The cats love the tinsel. They're really fascinated by what we call in the veterinary field as linear foreign bodies. Okay.
Ah, okay.
So whether that's yarn or if you crochet or you knit, whatever. The tinsel on the tree is very attractive to a cat. They play with it, they eat it, and then they get so carried away that they consummate their relationship by ingesting it.
Yes.
And if they get a linear foreign body, either getting lodged under their tongue or in their pylorus, and the rest goes into the gut, the intestine does its magic, its peristalsis, and you get this accordion-like effect. It placates, and it could be very serious, even deadly. So watch out for tinsel as far as the cats are concerned, the wrapping, the plastic wrap.
Yeah.
They love to play with that. So there's always ways animals get into trouble. There's always things they find out to get into trouble.
It's funny. Some of the cats that I've had over the years loved the tinsel. Love to rip up wrapping paper on Christmas. The one I have now loves to sit under the tree, doesn't do a darn thing.
Well, there are cats and there are other cats. They all have personalities. It's amazing. I mean, you know, sometimes people buy these elaborate toys. It's just like kids. You buy an expensive toy if you're a kid, and the more you're interested in the wrapping at a certain age.
Yeah.
Same with animals. You buy a great expensive cat toy, and they're just playing with a cereal box after that.
Yeah, how about that? Well, let's get to the phones. Our number is 800-348-2551. We'll start out with Carrie in Kingston. Carrie, you're first.
Oh, hi there. Thank you. I have an 8-year-old tuxedo cat. He's a little bit overweight, but lately he's been throwing up occasionally after he eats, and he's been eating the same brand of dry cat food for a while, but the only thing I noticed that's different is that there's the hairball component to it where it's supposed to reduce hairballs, and I don't know if that might have something to do with it.
Okay.
Carrie, it might have something to do with it,
yes.
And it might be something independent. What happens is, and especially with overweight cats, they love their food. They love their eating.
Yeah.
And it happens way more with dry food than canned. But what happens is they gorge out. They eat too much too quickly, And then 10 minutes later, they bring up this chewed up and undigested food. It's in the shape of an esophagus. No surprise. Mm. Kind of like a hairball. When they bring up a hairball, it's also in the shape of an esophagus. So if the hairball is clumping in that stomach and impeding the progress of food, then that could have an effect on vomiting up of the food. But it's a simple fix, Carrie. First of all, it's only happening once a month or less. I don't even necessarily recommend people doing anything about it.
Okay.
But if it's happening every week or twice a week, well, then what you need to do is feed the cat a small amount at a time. What you do, you feed the cat a teaspoon or two every few hours. You do that for a few days. You find out there's no vomiting. Then you up the cat to 3 or 4 teaspoons at a time. Every 3 hours, you do it for a few days, you find that it's okay. What happens eventually, when you get up to whatever, 7, 8, 9 teaspoons at a time, and they start having enough to be able to gorge out, eat too quickly, and regurgitate up 10 minutes later, well, now you know to bump it down a step or two, and that's the level that you feed them at from now on to stop the puking up of the food.
Okay, let's go over to Ellen in Berlin, New York. Ellen, you're on.
Oh, hello. Hi, Dr. Scharf.
Hi, Ellen.
1991 to, like, 97, you took care of my dog, Rags, at the Lansenburg Veterinary Hospital.
Oh, so back in the day, in the Berg. Okay.
I wanted to say hello and say thank you, because he had been through a lot of trauma, and I know he trusted you a lot.
Thanks so much for saying so. That's great, Ellen. Good to hear.
Yeah, well, I made up a question, too, even though I don't currently have any pets.
Go ahead. Shoot.
I've had my share, but I noticed my coworkers who are hunters, the ticks have been very aggressive with them, and it's really tough when my cat, another pet I had, a cat was bringing in ticks. It's hard to find them sometimes. What do you recommend for tick control with your animals?
So it's a great question, Ellen. The problem is that there's no 100% effective insecticide. Anything that's strong enough to be 100% effective is going to be toxic for the animal, in particular cats. They're very sensitive. Their livers are a little quirky, and those livers allow them to be more susceptible to toxins than dogs. So whenever you're using an insecticide on a cat, it's like a trade-off. You use something which is good enough, but not toxic for the animal. A lot of the over-the-counter products are sometimes too strong for a cat, and they'll show it. So I always recommend getting a product from your veterinarian. And what I recommend doing for ticks, that's a kind of a holy grail for me, to get something that is easy to give to a cat that'll do not only fleas but tick control. We don't have a lot of products. The front line's been around so long that I think that this resistance that's been building up against it, so it's not as effective as it used to be. As far as tick control, there are no oral products like I know, like a dog can eat something, take it as a treat, much more convenient. Cats don't have that. You got to go topical. The one that I'm using nowadays is called Catego, C-A-T-E-G-O. But there are other ones. There's Brevecto. There are a few others. Like I say, they're not 100% effective, but they're in the 90s. You know, they're pretty up there.
Yeah.
But if the cat's going where your hunter friends are going, you know, deep into the forest, that's where the ticks hang out. And by the way, Ellen, a lot of people think when it gets cold, October, usually in October, it wasn't such a cold October for us this year, but October, November, people think, we're done with ticks. Wrong. The ticks love October and November. They are in their element. And also, I was just talking to Ray, this past February, we had both mosquitoes and ticks on our patients.
Wow.
Okay, so I'm thinking flea and tick is like an 11-month-a-year season as far as how many months a year do you keep them on flea and tick control.
Yeah.
So I'd go not only December, I'd go through December as far as using something like whether it's the Catego or the Brevecto or another product, and then I'd start back up in March, if not sooner.
All right, Ellen, thanks a lot. Let's go to Mary in Beacon. Mary, you're on.
Hi. I have three cats, or they're kittens, but they're basically 4 or 5 months old, and they got their first booster a long time ago, but there was an emergency in the family, so we didn't go to the second and third shots, and now they are all sneezing because the weather turned. They're indoor cats, and I'm worried about how do I proceed? Do I go to get their boosters again to do the sequence of shots, or do I wait till they're coughing? I mean, not coughing, but their colds, seeming colds, are stopped. I don't know what I'm dealing with here. I've got three of them, so it's going to be expensive if I take them. You know?
Okay. Do they have colds? Is that what you said, Mary?
I don't know.
Are they healthy?
It's like they sneeze. Oh yeah, they got lots of spunk. They love to play, okay. And actually today they didn't eat too well. I noticed that. So I guess that's a sign, isn't it?
Let me ask you a couple of questions. First of all, I assume you're talking about distemper, okay? Distemper has three viruses that protects a cat against, two of which are upper respiratory viruses. So if they only got one distemper so far, they need a booster. You could do it any time, though if they're sick or if they have a cold, that's not the best time to vaccinate a cat, just when they're trying to deal with something. You want the immune system to focus on the pathogen they're dealing with, the virus or whatever it is. But if they're not sneezing, if they're not runny nose, runny eyes, etc., then by all means, bring them in for a distemper booster, and then they should be good for at least a year. Rabies, you definitely want to do that starting at 3 months of age. The first one a cat ever gets is good for 1 year. And then after that, depending upon your vet, all subsequent ones are good for either 1 or 3 years, depending upon the label. So those are the only two that you need. I'm sorry?
They did get the rabies shot.
Excellent.
I might just take the sickest of the three kittens in and have them looked at by the veterinarian.
Absolutely.
Or the other one.
Yeah,
you find out about the others.
Hey, thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Mary. Sure
All right,
thing.
We need to take a quick break here, Ron. Our guest is Dr. Ron Scharf from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna. We'll be back on this Pets and Vets edition, 800-348-2551.
Comes from Lathrop Retirement Communities, communities of older adults devoted to social responsibility and personal and intellectual enrichment, Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, lathrop.kendall.org. Ichiban Japanese and Chinese Restaurant, Central Avenue, Albany, serving hibachi dinners, sushi, sashimi, curry soups, and Thai entrees, daily specials, delivery to Greater Albany, including Gilderland, 518-432-0358. Culligan Water of the Northeast, for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work, culligannortheast.com. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans, so our past has a future, preservenys.org. And Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, offering wine and craft spirits from around the globe and from local artisans, hand-picked selection of wines, single malts, and small batch bourbons, GrapesandGrainsWine.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you, and it's a Pets and Vets edition today. Dr. Ron Scharf is here to answer your questions at 800-348-2551 or via email at voxpop@wamc.org. And Dr. Ron, this came in via email from Donna, who writes, "My new 6-year-old female cat isn't eating much. She seldom approaches food. I have to present it to her. The vet found no medical reason for this. How can I get her to eat? I got the food she was given in her previous home, dry food, but I've also tried wet food, baby food, and the vet gave her an appetite stimulant, which only works for about an hour, and she is now off of it."
Wow.
So you got to get the cat to eat.
Well, you got to get the cat to eat, but I wonder how long ago she got the cat. Is this something that she just got it a few days ago?
Well, she said no.
Right. So a lot of cats are skittish. You don't know what kind of background they came from. You don't know what kind of situation or baggage they're carrying.
Yeah.
Some of these rescues, it's like PTSD. They're just scared of everything, and especially cats. Cats are wary just in general.
Yep.
It's kind of like hardwired into a lot of cats. Now, a 6-year-old cat's not really old, but An appetite stimulant is good, but it's true. It doesn't last that long, though an hour is less than I would have expected. You need to experiment with different foods. Obviously, you've started to do that. You've tried canned food, which, by the way, is my preference. Mm-hmm. Canned food is much better than dry. The baby food is good to try out, but it doesn't have a complete and balanced nutrition. So the best thing would be to go with a quality commercial cat food from a reputable company, so you know that there's quality control. A lot of these companies do research and development as far as finding better foods to make. I just would keep on experimenting, Donna. Sometimes if you heat up the food, if you put it in the microwave or whatever, you get it aromatic. Yeah. Sometimes just taking it out of the refrigerator, cats will often turn their nose about it because it's cold. They're finicky. Cats are notorious for being finicky.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you can put some tuna juice on it, you know, some kind of thing that would attract them, they generally appreciate more protein and fat sources than they would carbohydrate sources. So no sugar and no pasta or bread or anything. But protein like meat or cheese. Cheese is a big one with cats.
Really? Cheese?
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying you should keep them on it. But as far as tempting them into the food bowl.
You're kidding me.
And then weaning back on the cheese. Cats love cheese.
Velveeta and stuff?
Well, I don't know every particular cat's preferences.
What about easy cheese?
I think that you'll find a cat that'll eat that.
Okay,
okay,
all right.
But this cat, who knows what the preferences are? It might be for brie cheese, for all I know.
Oh, delicious.
You don't
Very
know.
Nice.
You don't want to give too much because that'll be an upset stomach.
Yeah.
But you want to use it as a kind of like a hook, like a thing, get the cat in the door
yeah.
kind of thing, near the bowl, and then try to wean them off of that. So you could try tuna fish. That's a big one.
Yep.
Cats love tuna
yep.
fish. And just experiment around, you know, meats they like. You know, it depends on which meat.
Huh.
But you need to try different ones.
All right.
Keep it warm. Keep it aromatic. And then just let the cat get used to it because you just got the cat and it's going to, the dust will settle. The cat will start getting a little bolder.
All right. This one is from Dave in Connecticut. We have had St. Bernards in our family for over 40 years. And 8 out of 10 have suffered from what we call dry nose. The front edge of their noses becomes dry and cracked. We've tried several remedies with no real success. Any thoughts?
Yes. It's called hyperkeratosis, and a lot of dogs get that. And what I recommend is putting something on the nose that's a moisturizer, and it almost doesn't matter what you use. It could be Vaseline or KY or A&D ointment, whatever it is. But the trick is they're going to lick it off.
Right.
So what do? You get a great high-value treat in your hand. Their eyeballs are glued on that treat. You put that Vaseline on their nose, then you immediately hold that treat next to them, the aroma, the taste, it's going to make them hopefully forget about the fact that there's something on their nose, and hopefully they won't lick
right.
it off too much. So you just do what you can, and you know, you try to do it a few times a day, and eventually the hope is that it would sink in and moisturize, and
okay.
the moisturization would take care of it. Some of these dogs, like some of your small dogs, your Bostons or whatever, they'll get a really major hyperkeratosis, and sometimes you'll even have to kind of like sand it down with them under anesthesia.
Oh, man. Sand
but
down
that
the nose?
Is, well, it's like our nails. You know, it's dead tissue by
yeah.
the time it gets there.
Mm-hmm.
You just want to make sure you don't go too close to the skin
yeah.
to the live part.
Yeah.
But that's an unlikely thing.
Okay.
Dave didn't mention that part.
All right.
So, yeah, good luck, Dave.
Okay, and then one more email and then back to the phones. This one's from Trish, who says, "Hello, Dr. Scharf. Our Australian Shepherd Pearl is a patient of yours. As you know,
Trish!
As you know, she has a lot of allergy problems, and I have a question that may be obvious, but here it is anyway. Pearl had developed a hot spot on her front paw from licking. I don't see any other injury there. I put Gen 1 on it with a sock and kept it on for 2 days. It has healed very well with the topical spray, but I noticed whenever I take her sock off, she starts licking. She'll lick my hand, the sofa, her other paw. I think she is because... this is because of her allergies. Do you agree? Would a dog lick endlessly if they were having seasonal allergies?" And that's from Trish.
Trish, hello.
Hello.
Trish, I love Trish. She has been coming for many years.
Okay.
But... And I am totally not surprised that she has made the right diagnosis.
Okay.
A lot of people think it's neurotic that the dog is just bored or nervous or whatever, and they're licking their paw because they have nothing else to do. It ain't the case. It's allergies.
All right.
Allergies are classic, and the one that causes them to lick their paws is an inhalant allergy. Allergic inhalant dermatitis in dogs is called atopy, A-T-O-P-Y, and they got the itch. If they got the itch, the sock is a barrier. When there's no barrier, they
sure.
go for the paw.
Right.
So you do need to use something for an allergy. A very low-level allergy may respond to an H1 blocker, otherwise known as an antihistamine. So just an antihistamine would take care of a mild allergy. Something worse than that, we have great products. Until about 5 years ago, we only had prednisone.
Yeah.
That can cause major problems. They drink a lot. They pee a lot. Sometimes they have accidents in the house. And if you use it for long stretches, like some allergy seasons for animals go months, well, then it can have major internal side effects. It could turn someone diabetic or have a problem with an organ or two.
Mm-hmm.
So we now have great products. One is called Apoquel. It's a pill. It's great. And allergic dogs do so much better with it. Apoquel. But we have a newer one, came out just about a year and a half ago, called Cytopoint. It
yeah.
is an injectable that lasts a month. So some dogs, it might last longer than that. Some dogs, it might be a little less.
Okay.
But a month, you don't have to give any medication to the animal, and it's amazing.
All right.
There's so many animals, dogs, that get good on that stuff.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Beth in East Hampton, Beth, you're on.
Hi, Dr. Sharp and Ray. Thanks
Hi,
for
Beth.
Taking my call.
Hi.
Hi. I have a 14-year-old female cat who has been diagnosed with ceruminous adenoma hyperplasia.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
What is it?
She has a sort of little lumps down in her ear.
Yeah.
And
they're blue.
And they itch.
They're blue?
Yes. Yeah.
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 They itch her. I don't think they've gotten worse. And this was diagnosed a year or more ago. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can... They don't itch constantly, but once she starts to scratch, she has a lot of trouble stopping.
So the reason
yeah.
I groan when I hear about your cat's unfortunate diagnosis, Beth, is not because it's malignant. It's not. But because it's in an inaccessible place
uh-huh.
to get out, okay? So
yeah.
the ear canal, unless you want to do a major surgery to open up the lateral canal, is inaccessible to surgery. Now, I'm a little surprised that you say they itch, because generally speaking, Beth, I don't see cats with ceruminous adenomatous hyperplasia have a whole lot of itching. So that makes me curious, could there be something else going on? Could there be a little ear infection or something like that? Your cat needs to have an otoscopic cone in the ear canal so that a veterinarian can visualize everything else and make sure that there's not something else going
uh-huh.
on, a bacterial infection, a yeast infection, ear mite, an eardrum problem, that kind of thing. If there's none of that, I don't know if I've ever seen that problem be accompanied by
uh-huh.
an itch. So I'm just curious, how was the diagnosis arrived at? Was a sample taken? Was some tissue sent to the lab?
No. She looked, with an ear tool.
All right.
A common ear tool. And then she printed this out for me.
Okay.
From her computer with photographs.
So it might be correct. And what uh-huh. I would recommend, given the situation here, is if there's any accessible, you know, sometimes they are accessible. They're only at the very tip of the ear canal, and you could totally get a sample, send it into the lab, get a diagnosis. Then you know what you're dealing with, because this is a presumptive diagnosis, and it may point you in a slightly non-ideal
okay.
direction, so to speak.
All right, fair enough.
Get a biopsy
okay.
if you can. Yeah.
Uh-huh. In the meantime, she also has tooth resorption. Is that related?
No, it's not related. And tooth resorption in a cat is very common. And it's like having a cavity, but it's way worse. It's a cavity to the nth degree. And we don't know why the heck it happens. We've been putting in the veterinary field a lot of research into it. And we can't find an infectious organism. We don't know why cats get them, but they are a plague. And they eat away at the where the crown meets the root, and it hurts. And you barely touch it with your fingernail, and the cat winces. And when it gets bad enough, if you don't do something about it, like take the tooth out, then the crown will crack off, and it could leave a root buried. And sometimes that root will fester. In other words, it could be inflamed. Sometimes if you're lucky, the body resorbs it, and it goes away. But if it doesn't resorb it, then you got this buried root, and it's kind of like a foreign body, and you have inflammation around the area. So if you see any red spots in an area where there's no tooth, you got to start wondering, did a crown crack off? And the most common teeth in a cat, Beth, that that'll happen to is the tiny premolars that are right behind the lower fangs. Those are the two. The lower premolar threes, they don't have ones and twos in a cat's lower jaw. The lower premolar threes are the most common to get those. The long word is an odontoclastic resorptive lesion. They're also called neckline lesions or neck lesions or cervical line lesions. They've got a million names, but they do hurt. And when they get bad enough, I recommend extracting them. No relation to the shrewminous hyperplasia.
Beth, thanks a lot for the call. Quickly, we'll go on over to Marianne in Albany. Marianne, you're on.
Hi, Ray and Doctor.
Hello.
Good to speak to you. I too have a male tuxedo cat, and he's a licker. And periodically, he will have a few instances of throwing up in that esophagus form you talked about. But in connection with that today, he also seems to have a loose stool, and it has a terrible smell. So I'm wondering if he's licked something. He is a licker. And I'm wondering if, you know, he's ingested something poisonous.
Well, how's he acting? If he was acting sick, or if he was drooling at the mouth, or if he was you know, rubbing in his mouth like something hurts there, then I would be suspicious of a toxin. But I would not assume that there's a toxin just because he has loose stool. There's a million things, Marianne, that'll cause a cat's poop to go loose. What you want to do is put him onto a low-fat food and only offer small amounts at a time.
Okay.
What you're doing is you're minimizing the challenge to the intestinal tract to digest that food. And when I say low-fat, I mean either something you get at your vet or you boil, B-O-I-L, you boil up some chicken or some hamburger or fish, whatever you want. But that's what makes it low-fat or no-fat. And you give a small amount, I'm talking a teaspoon. If the cat eats it, you could boil up some rice. Rice is a good binder. I'm talking white rice, not minute rice, not brown rice. Brown rice is very hard for carnivores to digest.
Huh.
But white rice is easier. Go to the Chinese buffet if you feel like it. But one-to-one, white rice and boiled meat, small amounts means a teaspoon, and then a couple hours later, two teaspoons, and then five, then eight. And then every once in a while, you give a little more than last time. If the diarrhea does not get better, you bring a sample to the vet to make sure there's no parasites and talk to him or her to see what the next steps would be.
All right, Marianne, thanks so much for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Dr. Ron Scharf is here. It's Pets and Vets. 800-348-2551 is the number. Betty in West Sand Lake. Betty, you're on.
Hi. I'm just wondering if you could comment on the use of Havanese dogs as therapy dogs, and also do they have any health issues?
Okay, your connection's pretty bad, Betty, so we'll pot you down here, and we'll let Dr. Scharf answer, and we'll bring it back to you for a follow-up.
So, Betty, I think that Havanese, depending upon the personality and the training, can make a great therapy dog. One concern that I have, just parenthetically, about therapy dogs, what people might not necessarily take into account, depending upon the situation that you're taking the therapy dog to, say you're going to an old age home, a nursing home, or whatever, people might have compromised immune systems. Well, dogs carry things that can get us sick even if we don't have compromised immune systems, things on their tongue, things, etc., that you want to be careful that your dog is healthy, and if your dog is licking people as a therapy dog, you want to, you know, I just suggest good hygiene, wash your hands, wash your face, that kind of thing.
Okay.
So that people, especially people who are immunocompromised, either by sickness or by chemotherapy or whatever medications, don't get sicker as a result of these therapy dogs. But I think it's great to do therapy dogs. It's great to go not only to nursing homes, but therapy dogs go to law school when they're taking finals, and they go to the airport, and it's just an amazingly good thing to do. So yes, if your Havanese Betty is a good-natured dog, and it's not threatened by people, then I think it's a good thing to do. As far as what problems dogs get, well, all breeds get all manners of problems, and it's funny because whenever someone starts talking about their breed, so-and-so, my wife is so used to me saying, oh, yeah, they get a lot of you know, whatever
X,
problem,
y, Z,
a lot of
yeah.
eye problem, a lot of back problem, a lot of this, that, the other thing. That's my lens. That's my veterinary lens that I'm looking through. I don't think of Havanese as getting a whole lot of problems more than any other breed. I do think that mixed breeds have a hybrid vigor, and they do get less genetic problems and less medical and surgical problems in general. Havanese, they're small dog. Maybe their bones aren't as straight as a bigger dog, and so sometimes that'll have an effect on their skeleton. They are a bit of a, sometimes, if I'm not mistaken, a dome-shaped head dog, means that they could be born with an open fontanelle, so you want to watch out for that. Other than that, maybe knees, you know, kneecaps, but I don't think of them as having a whole heck of a lot of horrible problems, Betty. So go to it. I think that you'll do great with the Havanese as a therapy dog.
All right, Betty.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks sure a lot thing. For the call. Dr. Ron Scharf is our guest. We'll take a quick break here, and then we'll hit the home stretch. 800-348-2551.
Support for WMC comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972, PelhamAuto.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, a plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery, fat transfers, facial rejuvenation, breast augmentation, and laser and skin care since 1996, 518-786-1700. Chester Common Table, Main Street, Chester, Massachusetts. Locally sourced comfort food, beers, wines, and cocktails. Live music every Friday, chestercommontable.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. skidmore.edu/tang. And Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing short-term and outpatient physical, occupational, and speech rehabilitation therapy. DaughtersofSarah.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's Pets and Vets with Dr. Ron Scharf. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we'll try to blast through a bunch of calls here, Ron, but let's take two quick emails, and then back to the phones we will go. And I dropped the first one here. This one's from Bob. 3 weeks ago, we adopted a rescue dog. She's adorable, gets along well with our cats. We feed her early morning and again about 5 or 6 p.m., each time a cup of dry mixed with a quarter of a small container of wet. While she is definitely house-trained, a few times she's had an accident during the day when we weren't home. What's the best way to eliminate this problem? Should we modify her feeding schedule? If so, how? If not, what should we try? And that's from Bob.
So I don't know how old the rescue dog. It doesn't say the age.
Does not say.
Okay. So it might be, Bob, that the dog is just not totally housebroken.
Yeah.
And what you need to do is housebreak the dog. So what you do, it's kind of like most people have heard before. You always go to the same spot outdoors, whether it's the same bush, the same tree. You use the same words. You say, okay, spot, do your business, and whatever phrase you choose.
Mm-hmm.
And they're on a leash, so they know that nothing's going to happen. Eventually, they pee. You praise them to the skies. You make a party. You give them a treat. Good boy, good boy. You know, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Then they could play, okay? I think if you let them play first, they'll go whenever they want to, and they haven't learned anything. If you take them to the same spot, same words, wait till they do something, and if they don't, if you wait longer than 3 or 4 minutes, I go back inside and give him another chance 10 or 20 minutes later.
Okay.
Because I like getting business out of the way before playtime. Okay. Now then on the inside, when they're in the house, I got a somewhat novel technique for you to use that whenever they're not in their crate, they are attached to your wrist by a leash. That's the only way you're going to catch them in the act. If you don't catch them in the act doing their business indoors, then you've missed a valuable learning opportunity. The learning opportunity is that they're going to yell at and mom or dad's going to be unpleasant if I do my business in the house. On the other hand, if I do it at that bush when I hear those words, I get a big party and a marching band and a treat. They eventually migrate to doing all their business outdoors.
Even so, when Bob is not home. This is the issue because it's okay. They had the accident. The dog has the accident during the day when they're not home.
Okay. So what you need to do is find out how long the dog can hold out in a crate because their instinct is to not mess where they sleep.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it might be that in their previous life before you, Bob, that they may just have not been housebroken and lost their instinct to not mess where they sleep.
Okay.
That would be a bigger challenge. But if they have not lost that instinct, you just want to make sure that the crate is big enough for them to stand up and turn around comfortably. If it's bigger than that, then their instinct will allow them to go in the far corner of the crate. And so the crate is essential, and the size of the crate is essential. And that size, as I said, should be just big enough for them to stand around and turn around comfortably. And if they have not overcome their instinct, then that's how they'll be good in the house. You want to see how long they could last in the nighttime, and that'll tell you how long they could last in the daytime when they're sleeping. If they could last 7 hours, it means that they're physically able to do the same thing when they're awake. So, good luck to you, Bob.
Okay. All right. This one's from Ann, and then back to the phones. This is two short questions from Ann. I adopted a senior dog, 8-year-old Beagle mix, about 5 months ago. So the first question, she can be very aggressive towards some dogs, but not all. Is there anything I can do to tame that aggression? 8-year-old Beagle mix, just adopted.
Okay.
5 months ago.
So you need to, in a very careful, structured way, socialize that dog to other dogs. And it's unknown what causes that dog, what's setting that dog off about some and not others. So what I would recommend is find a good doggy daycare with people run by people that know what they're doing. And what they could do is in a very careful, structured, and safe way, introduce that dog to other dogs and then find out what the chemistry is like. And sometimes if you have an established doggy daycare situation, it's like a pack. And new entrance to the pack will often adopt their behavior to the pack ethos, so to speak. So what you're doing is the pack's got their rules. The rules are we are nice and we play together civilized-like and we don't get seriously aggressive and antisocial.
Yeah.
And if the dog can't handle that, which is a possibility, then you try to find a doggy daycare that either has a different situation.
Yes,
that
for
may,
troubled dogs.
May, yes, yes, a troubled dog doggy daycare.
Yes.
I don't know if that exists.
All right.
But you experiment around, and hopefully you can get the dog through it. But I think that it's possible that the dog will always have some residue of aggression because we don't know what's setting the dog off.
Okay, and then the second question, the dog is in good health. Recently, all her teeth were checked and all when she adopted her. Sometimes her breath is just doggy sweet, and other times, sometimes minutes later, it's Holy Mother of God, where did that odor come from? Ooh-wee. Now, is that just her being a dog, or could it be GI issues?
It could be her being a dog, could be GI issues, or it could be that she got into something she shouldn't have. She got into a carcass in the backyard.
Yeah.
She got into God knows what dead mice there are in the in the basement. So
right.
What you want to do is, and this is one of my two big things as a veterinarian, I'm very concerned about dental health because if you take all the animals in the country and you don't have any opportunity to do a physical exam, and someone asked me, what's going to be the biggest problem for most animals? It's going to be teeth, because no one thinks about what's going on in their animal's mouth. They think a dog ought to have dog breath or a cat ought to have cat breath, and that ain't the case.
Okay.
Think about what your breath would be like if you haven't brushed your teeth in a few months.
Yeah.
Think about what your teeth would be like if you hadn't brushed ever, and maybe you have cavities, periodontalizes, etc. It stinks.
Yeah.
And how it smells is how the animal feels. So I am big on cleaning teeth.
Okay.
It makes their quality of life way better. And when their teeth are clean, you put your nose in that animal's mouth, you won't smell anything.
You're going to put your nose in the animal's mouth?
I'm metaphorically,
okay. Because, you know, that's wrong.
I'm thinking,
all right.
Get close. I do it. I do it in my physical exams. I'll smell
what you and
mouth.
Your dog do, it's your own business.
It grosses most people out, including my staff, but okay. I believe in using as many senses as possible in your diagnostics.
All right, I'm uncomfortable now. Let's go to Myra in Cobleskill. Myra, you're on.
Hi. Thank you. I have a 10-year-old dog who recently developed blue eyes. I took her to the vet, and after examinations and blood tests, she told me that it was nuclear sclerosis, and that there was really nothing I could do about it, that it wouldn't affect her too badly. At this point, though, she can barely see, I'm guessing shades. She recently fell down the steps, a long staircase, because of that, injured her leg, and I'm taking her to another vet because of the circumstances that occurred. And she immediately looked at this and said, cataracts. And so I'm wondering, is there anything that I can visibly see that's different to try and make a decision between it being either of the two ailments, and is there any treatment or cure that can help alleviate either condition?
Yes, well, not for nuclear sclerosis, which sounds like probably you're correct, Myra, that it was an incorrect diagnosis, because it's a normal aging change. It happens in people, too. In people, it's called lenticular sclerosis. In either case, the lenses are precision structures. If they're not totally perfect, then they don't let the light through as much as they ought to so that the retinas can see things. And as someone gets older, and in animals, it's often 6 to 8 years of age, that pupil is no longer jet black, but rather starts getting a little hazy and a little blue. So it could be nuclear sclerosis, but if the animal is not seeing stuff and falling down the stairs, it does argue for a greater likelihood of cataracts. The only way you could see cataracts 90% of the time is with an ophthalmoscope. All it is a light and a magnifier, and you could see a lens opacity, okay? Now, cataracts can be removed, just like in people. And if they're removed, then the opacities that are preventing the light from getting through the retina is no longer happening. Now, you don't have the clear resolution. Your vision is not as a little blurry without lenses, because the light's not being refracted correctly onto that spot on the retina where it needs to be in order to be seen clearly, but you'll regain vision. The problem is that timing is utmost importance. If you are too late, forget about it. If you're too early, it's not time yet to do the cataract. So you got to go to an ophthalmologist. There are veterinary ophthalmologists in the area in more than one practice, and you can ask them, are they cataracts, and can we do surgery for them? Nuclear sclerosis? No, you can't do anything. It's age. And it's just like if you look at the eyes of a 30-year-old or 40-year-old person compared to a 70 or an 80, the 40-year-old has got jet black pupil and the 70-year-old doesn't.
Huh.
So, you know, it's a bear getting old, but
yeah.
That should not have a profound effect on the vision, though, just nuclear sclerosis.
Okay. Myra, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Rick in Hudson. Rick.
Oh, good afternoon. I have two adult cats, 12 and 14. The female is a spayed female. She's a Nibelung. She's a unique breed.
And what?
The 14-year-old is a male, neutered. I have dietary problems with both of them. I have sporadic work hours. I try to feed them around 6 p.m. Some nights I don't get home till around 10 p.m. I always leave a little dry food out for them for the day. They're indoor cats, and when I give them the wet food later at night, within 5 minutes, they're both vomiting up the wet and the dry food, and then they will not eat again for the rest of the night until the next morning. Any suggestions?
Okay.
Okay, so I don't know if this is similar to an earlier caller in which the cat was eating too much food too quickly. Usually it's more likely dry food that this happens to than canned. And they'll vomit up. It's not really even vomiting. It's regurgitate up this chewed up and undigested food 10 minutes later. So it could be that, except if it were due to eating too much too quickly, it usually... their appetite is not gone. I mean, they are still hungry afterwards, especially since they don't have the food in their stomach anymore. So the fact that you're saying that there was something afterwards, Rick, that they wouldn't eat, I forget what you said, the rest of the night, makes me wonder, is there a problem? Now, if there's both cats that it's happening to, then it's less likely an obstruction or something like that that happened in two cats simultaneously. I'd wonder about a parasite or a bacterial problem.
Okay.
So you just take the stool to the veterinarian, make sure there's no parasites, number one. Number two, you could try some empirical treatments. Empirical means we don't know what the problem is, but let's try this. Let's try that. A lot of people, a lot of vets like to use metronidazole. I use other things, sometimes a plain old penicillin. We have an injectable penicillin that's actually made for large animals, cows, but one injection will last for 4 to 5 days. And I'll find
I've had them both to the vet recently, and the vet said they're both healthy. I should adjust the way I feed them.
Oh, okay.
When I feed them in the morning just wet food, there's no problem. It seems the wet food going on top of the dry food is the problem. Maybe I shouldn't leave any dry food out at all during the day.
I would imagine, I'm wondering, Rick, are they getting so excited to see that end-of-the-day canned food that they dive into it with too much gusto and enthusiasm? I'm guessing. I'm spitballing here. I would say, yes, definitely feed them separately. I'm not a fan of leaving dry food out, though in your circumstances it may be unavoidable.
Yeah.
But cats are not necessarily built to be grazing all day long. And when they do, they tend to overeat and they tend to get overweight. And most of them are overweight. And I love cats not being overweight, dogs too.
Okay.
So if you could give them discrete meals, it would be better. And definitely feed the dry separate from the can. What I would do is... feed them small amounts at a time and then see what happens. So separate the dry in the can, feed them small amounts at a time. When you get home at 10 o'clock, then give them a teaspoon or two, and then at 10:30, give them 2 or 3 teaspoons, and, you know, 10:45, you know, like stretch it out a little, smaller amounts at a time, separate the dry from the can, see what happens.
All right, only about a minute left here. Let's go to Janice in Palmer, Massachusetts. Janice.
Hi, I'm calling because I have a 9-month-old pug that is having femur surgery right now. There's 3 breaks. He escaped for a few hours and came back this
Ouch.
Way. And I'm wondering about the prognosis. They can't say what happened to her, but it's broken in 3 spots, and she's in Boston now having surgery.
It almost doesn't matter what happened unless there was a penetrating
right.
object. If it was an open fracture, then yeah, there could be infection from the bugs that got injected from the outside world. But
right.
if it was a blunt trauma, and they're at a, if you're saying Boston, I'm thinking Tufts or somewhere like that, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They'll do a good job. We got plates, and they shape, they take the right size, they take the right shape. The problem with pugs is that they're what you call chondrodystrophic breed, meaning it's kind of like an earlier collar where the legs aren't straight like they ought to be, but they're more S-shaped,
right.
and that does present
right.
more problems. But a place like Tufts, they know what they're doing. If anyone's going to be able to fix them, I'd say that they're good candidates. So I'd say, Janice, 9 months is young. Young things heal quickly. I think you're probably going to be in good shape if you follow instructions and not let that dog go crazy in the healing process. That's one of the hardest parts, is keeping them unmaniacal until they are healed. Dogs are dogs, and young ones are even more so. So that's, I think, more the challenge than the actual surgery. But I haven't seen the x-rays. Can't say for sure. Good luck to you.
Hey, Ron, thank you. We're out of time. We appreciate it. What's the website for the Niskayuna Animal Hospital?
It's animalhospitalniskayuna.com.
All right, sir. Hey, thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Support comes from Penny Farthing Investment Management, Amherst, a socially conscious fee-only investment advisor of personal retirement and endowment portfolios, including the Bright Penny Community Strategies, brightpenny.org. The Hyde Collection, Glens Falls, this season featuring a distinguished selection of folk art from the collection of Barbara L. Gordon, hydecollection.org. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. And Wellspring, Saratoga Springs, New York, working to end relationship and sexual abuse in our community, wellspringcares.org. Thanks again to Ron Scharf for being here from the Animal Hospital of Niskayuna, and thank you for listening and for all the great calls. Sorry we did not get to more of them. They tend to really pile up here with our 10 lines, but we'll get it. We'll get them in there next time. Thanks again to Carol Lapani for answering the phones. Zach Malloy was our engineer. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Have a lovely rest of your day. Tomorrow, Bob Berman lands the old spaceship in Studio A. We'll talk astronomy. Stand by for news.